Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. My guest today coaches women executives passionate about leaving their wisdom to the next generation of strong, confident leaders, amongst other things. You may not consider yourself a business executive, but there's a good chance you manage a household, a home, and you are interested in leaving your wisdom with your next generations. Many of the same rules apply. We talk about challenges, ageism, sexism, and a number of other things. But on that subject of ageism, I was explaining to Julie how my elders think I know so much about all things tech, and the minute my words were out of my mouth, I realized I had used an infantilizing tone of voice to mimic one of them. Please forgive me. At one point, Julie is talking about how too often we define a person by one trait or position, and we miss out on all the other parts of that person. As an example of that, she mentions Josh Doss. That was a misspeak. It's Josh Dobbs who lives up to all the parts of that whole. Near the end, I also get really excited about Julie's podcast, Roaming with Restless Women, because I was thinking she interviewed female nomads. Like, I want to be a restless woman who roams. That's not quite accurate, although her content is still really interesting. And, spoiler alert, I do plan on getting Julie back on podcast to chat with me about the planning for and implementation of life as a digital nomad. Keep an eye out for that in the new year. Enjoy our conversation. Listen now. On today's guest's profile reads, coach to women executives passionate about leaving their wisdom to the next generation of strong, confident leaders. One of my regular comments is that I, and all of the women I know, no longer have the drive to be the ones who will change the world. We brought it part way, but now we are willing to be the role models for the women who will change the world. Julie also says, at some point, I allowed myself to stop trying to fit my square peg into the round hole of the corporate business world, and decided to embrace my disruptor. Many of us may not be executives in the business sense, but the legacy piece is the same. And I like the word disruptor. I also saw words like wisdom, matriarch, ageism, and change. So I think Julie and I will have lots to talk about. Julie Noonan, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here with you.
Well, you intrigued me with the round hole in a square. Is it no square peg in a round hole? Can we start there? Tell us about that part of your life, because, well, for me, it sounds familiar.
Definitely. I went into, I guess it kind of started for me in college, where I went to a private Catholic college, and I went to college with a lot of people who had a lot of wealth. I did not. I had to work five jobs just to put myself through. And I felt that division. I felt that I had been raised with a different playbook. I didn't know how to do certain things or be so in certain social situations. And but I learned pretty quickly by stuffing my square peg into the round hole, you know. And so when I went into the corporate world, it wasn't long. I was really, you know, promoted a lot quicker than I had anticipated. And I became vice president at a bank in my late 20s, early 30s. And things were going really, really well. And then I started to feel as if I was pressed down, that that I wasn't able to be my true self. And my true self was very definitely had a hot button about hypocrisy from a lot of my upbringing. And I started to see a lot, the higher up I got in the organization, the more I saw the hypocrisy. It was more about leaders telling people what to do. Don't do as I do as I say. A lot of, you know, women, men, different rules for women versus men. And I started speaking out And when I started to speak out, I started to get in trouble.
I saw that coming.
Yeah. I got labeled, negative. I worked on that for a long time in my career. And really, what I came to realize when I finally found a mentor who understood what I was actually trying to do, she said, it's not that you're wrong in what you're saying. It's in how you're saying it. And I said, but I don't want to be a hypocrite either. So I feel I need to find a way to be authentically me, to say what I need to say, because I was pointing out obvious risks in all these projects that I was doing. And they were coming true, 6 months down the road. I'm very good at picking out problems and that sort of thing. And so I worked with this mentor of mine for several years in my career to figure out how to still be my authentic self, but also say what I needed to say. Did my problems go away, overnight? No, they did not. But I learned to pick my battles. And that was more important to me than anything, is I didn't have to speak out all the time. But when I did speak out, I could be authentically myself and also was more accepted because I wasn't doing it all the time. Does that make sense?
We have some parallels in our life, yes.
Yeah.
I won't go into them, but just, finding mm-hmm. yourself excelling in the corporate world or in your business or whatever, and then realizing that, visually it's great,
yeah,
but it didn't feel right.
Correct.
And knowing that in order to be happy and not get ulcers and have a heart attack and all the rest of it is you use the word authenticity. And if you can't be your authentic self, then it's not going to be pretty long term.
Absolutely.
I want to go to boomers now. As they leave or prepare to leave the workplace, what are the challenges? I mean, this is where we're going ultimately. What are the challenges they face? And how do they tackle those challenges? It's really hard to make that decision when you've got that history in your position.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that they struggle with is remaining relevant as long as they want to stay in their corporate positions. That's number one, because things are changing so incredibly fast. A lot of my boomer clients, they know that they're not on the bleeding edge anymore. And they haven't realized they don't have to be. They're used to being the boss, the subject matter expert, the one who knew everything. And they now can't possibly know everything. And this has been happening over the last, 10, 15 years. COVID and artificial intelligence accelerated the feeling of being obsolete in a lot of boomers. Also, a lot of them have seen people who are maybe 5-10 years older than them be what I call put out to pasture. They are still a figurehead in the organization. They're still considered influential or valuable, but it's for their past performance. It's not for their current contribution, nor is it in preparation for a big future or even a legacy. And so they get slowly put out to pasture, or they get put in charge of projects, a special project. And everybody knows what that means. That just means we're going to put you somewhere until you retire. And a lot of boomers are watching, this happening more and more and more to their colleagues and their friends, and they don't want that to happen to them. So they, how they get help with that in particular is I do some coaching around that. I also do some mentoring around that. But I also put boomers and late generation or early generation Xers with millennials and Gen Z, and we do reverse mentoring. So the older generations will mentor in political savvy or in how to be how to show executive presence or communicating to large audiences or being on a board. What do you do when you're on a board? And then the younger generation will come along and say, okay, here's what AI is. Here's what it's not. I don't know this about it either. So don't worry, you know, and they may actually do some, hey, let me show you this on the computer. And a lot of it is technology, a lot of social media throws the boomers off. They're not quite sure how to position themselves. Mm-hmm. And they also, over time, many of them have become the job. So like Sandra Bullock said in, I think it was the first movie, Miss Congeniality, she was the FBI agent and she looked at her partner and she said, I am the job, because she didn't have a life outside of that. A lot of us so identify with the job because we have been phenomenally, you know, successful at it. It has given us power and prestige. It has given us acclamation, you know, awards, whatever the case may be. What happens when we're not that anymore? I coach a lot of people on how to re-engage with the person that they are outside of the profession that they chose. And that's probably my favorite way of, that's my favorite thing to coach around is, okay, so you're not going to be an accountant forever. It doesn't matter. You are still who you are. Where are we going to put you? Where do you want to be to contribute and create value going forward? Because life is all about creating value for yourself and everyone else. So I love asking that question. And we work through that. We work through, what's my next goal? Where do I want to show up?
Okay, well, I think you've probably just given a summary of exactly where I want to go with this.
Oh, good. Conversation. Sorry.
Interrupt me
if I keep going too long.
No, that's great. Because we can either wrap now, which I have no intention of doing, or I'm going to just pull out a few points anyways. Now,
absolutely.
You do point out that today's workplace could consist of four or five generations.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot of different viewpoints, and a lot of different viewpoints when social media has made it okay to be disrespectful, inflexible, when disagreements are had.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to that set of, I mean, we're not talking two generations anymore. We're talking four or five.
Yeah, we're definitely, it's definitely difficult in some cases in the current situation. Frankly, I find that the younger generation every generation has its pros and cons, okay? And not everyone in every generation is the same, so I hate to generalize. However, when conflict does occur amongst the generations, typically it comes down to, like you said, the one generation or that representative of that generation has an assumption about the other generation. And they come in with some bias around it. So they're looking for. So for instance, a boomer might come into the generation and they've heard so much or they've experienced a couple of times when the Gen X person ticks them off, right? They don't want to work. They don't, whatever. They've got this in their head, right? They automatically assume, and that's called a bias. And when you automatically assume, you watch for examples of that bias in everyone around you in that generation. You're going to find it. I challenge my clients to ignore the biases and get to know the people, the person. And I think what they find is you have more in common than you think you do. And frankly, if our culture was the same and it had the same emphasis on work life, family dynamic, if the woman wasn't at home all the time, you would be looking at work-life balance. You would be feeling the same thing, that you want to work your allotted hours. Sure, you'll do more every once in a while, but that shouldn't be the rule. That should be the exception. And so, you know, I can see the point of view on both sides. By the same token, you know, you do have to earn some chops. You do have to go through some experiences. You do have to sacrifice sometimes to become the best in your profession or your work, or to show extra to a customer and keep them, to rise to the levels that you think you deserve to rise to. There's some pay that's involved in that. And so I think both generations have a lot that they could teach the other generation and come out, I think, on the other end with a much more balanced understanding. I can tell you one thing. Collaboration makes me want to pull my hair out. It takes too much time. I'm the last of the boomers, the first of the Xers. I'm right on that cusp. And every time I think, oh my gosh, I have to collaborate. I can't just make the damn decision and move on. I have to collaborate. That takes two more weeks. What are you talking about? But that was the you know, soup I was swimming in my whole career. Now I find that I actually enjoy collaboration, but I put time blocks on it. So I've made the most of both worlds. I've had to learn to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you often think about, you know, like if someone's passing the torch, so to speak, it's going to go to the next generation. But do you see that sometimes it'll skip a generation and it's like, there's this person that's just like tailor-made almost, and you know, and that can cause animosities as well,
right? I think we're talking about assumptions. There's an assumption that succession is linear, you know, that seniority means something, and it does, but it may not mean what you're assuming that it means. And I firmly believe that we're getting into a point where we dehumanize people for the sake of putting them in a box so that we can deal with them faster. For instance, when you talk about somebody like Joss Doss was a quarterback at the University of Tennessee. I did not go there. I just heard this story and it just really resonated with me. His stats, he was a quarterback. His stats were awesome. But that's all anybody talked about. That's all they really knew about him. But if you looked closer, and then he went to the NFL and his stats were less than impressive. Let's put it that way. If that's all you knew about him, what are you doing? You're making him into a number. We do that a lot of times to people. I make you an accountant, so therefore you must be blah, 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 blah. Or I make you an HR person, therefore I must hate you because you are the police of my dress code. You know, all these assumptions. When you replace a person and their intrinsic value with a number or a title of a position, you're missing out on who they really are. So Joss Doss is actually a NASA scientist. he is literally a rocket scientist. Okay. And he has two amazing foundations that he funded. One to help kids, you know, assimilate and stay off the streets kind of. And then another for alopecia, which he has, which is the loss of hair. And so look how much we've missed in just putting those numbers on him. And I think that's what we do when we're talking about succession. You know, we need to really look at the person first, the skill second, and then, okay, what's everybody else going to think third? Because there is a ripple effect. You have to be able to manage that. I'm a change manager. So, you know, you have to be able to manage it. But we need to quit putting people in boxes.
Period. Yeah. No. And I love hearing those stories, and I love, you know, getting an ask about being a guest. I start doing some research, and I'm thinking, okay, this person wants to come on and talk about yoga, and same thing, she was a rocket scientist, and I'm going, who would have thought? But this is great. So yeah, it's really interesting. Now, we've sort of been beating around the bush a little bit, but can we go to ageism?
Yes.
Because it's everywhere. It goes in every direction, and plus it's also self-inflicted.
Oh, totally. When I got laid off the first time in my 50s, which was when I was 55, that's when I hit the brick wall with ageism. Before I hit that mid 50 area, I had recruiters calling me. You know, I turned down lots of interviews because I was happy where I was. I felt like that I was very, very marketable. I didn't really worry about having to find another job. I spent 8 months looking for another job when I got laid off at 55. And so just out of, okay, I got to have some money, I created my company and took a couple of projects, you know, just to keep some food on the table. And then I went right back into consulting. And I didn't really stop to think about it too much at that time. And then I got laid off 3 months into COVID, and I was 57. I knew I wasn't even going to get a nod. I wasn't even going to get an interview because of my past experience. So that's when I decided to open my own company. The things that happened when I was facing the ageism was I would you know, apply to jobs that were easily, I had done it for however many years, and I was getting responses like, you're overqualified, responses like, you're going to be too expensive, we can't afford you, without even asking, responses like, well, and this was implied. This wasn't ever actually said, because then I would have taken him to court, you know, but things that implied that because of my tenure and my longevity in my career, that I didn't have any new ideas, that I would be just trash, you know, bringing along all my old ideas. And what it told me was, people assume, and again, assumptions, people assume that you quit learning. They assume that you just, you know, once you get to the highest level that you can attain, that you're no longer curious, that you're no longer learning, that you're no longer coming up with new ideas, that somewhere along the line, somebody implanted in your brain, back in the day, or this is the way we used to do it, and this is the best way to do it, you know. No, that doesn't get planted into your brain. So what we do to ourselves is when we jokingly say to another person, oh, I'm old, I can't do that. Oh man, AI just, no, I don't want to have anything to do with it because I'm scared. You know, I'm scared. What if I can't catch on to it? Who cares?
Reminds me of Bitcoin. It's like, I still get it, but I really, like, I've got this much get and this much don't get. So,
right.
And for those listeners, I gave a small piece and a big piece.
I looked into Bitcoin myself, and at some point there was this logic thing in my brain that said, okay, it doesn't exist. And I got the whole concept. And good for you guys, but I am a little bit too risk averse to put a lot of
and yet, more if we'd done it way back then, we'd be sitting on a mountain right now.
No, not really. They crashed a couple of years ago, so
yeah. Well, they're coming back too.
Yeah, I know.
Who you go with, but
yeah, that was the first round.
Yeah, right. Now you talk about, you know, people being no longer able to learn or willing to learn or something like that. Is it the same for men and women? I don't really like going into the patriarchy, but do men get the same response at age 57? Or do people look at them and say, like, oh, distinguished executive?
I think they have longer. I think women's expiration date is earlier, at least in my experience and in my perspective, and talking to the women that I coach. Men seem to have a little bit longer on the shelf, but it is getting, I would say they have probably until about 62 or 3. We have until about 55. Until
Which
people start
crazy.
Wondering. I know.
Well, it drives me crazy because at age 25, you're ignored, like a woman is ignored because, she's going to end up taking time off to make babies, you know? Here we are 2024, and people are only now realizing that mid-age women have this thing called menopause, and it is real. You know, like, it seems like every time we turn around, we're getting, you know, slammed to the pavement.
But shame on us, because you know what? We should have been talking about it a long time ago. And that's part of it. When I look back at, like, who were my idols back in the early 80s when I was in college. Okay. So before us, there was, the Gloria Steinem and that whole movement and the 70s ladies. And they were making progress, right? The women in the 50s, when they ran the factories, they also made some progress because they showed it could be done. But it's like this big movement and then it drops off. And this big movement and then it drops off. So in the early 80s, who are we looking at? We were looking at Barbara Walters. We were looking at Murphy Brown. What's her name? Mary Tyler Moore, late 70s. But those were the women that we were looking at. My first job in corporate America was in banking in the 90s. We still had to wear skirts. What the hell?
Yeah.
You know, why are we still wearing bras, for crying out loud? So,
okay, that's a whole nother.
Oh, that's a whole nother thing. Yeah. But, but in the 70s and 80s, how I was introduced to how you have to be in corporate America to be successful was I had to compete. I had to compete with the boys. I had to compete with the girls. We were set up to compete with each other. And this is one of the visions that I had in my head, and I tried to make Dali create it for me. It couldn't do it. I see the corporate ladder and I see women in their skirts climbing the corporate ladder, and I see women right behind them with knives stabbing them in the back to go up around them. We allowed that to happen. We allowed each other to forget that we're stronger together and helping each other. And what happened was we tried to play like the boys. They do competition. They know how to do competition.
Well, the thing is, you've got the old boys clubs. You've never heard of an old girls club or old women's club.
Well, no, it's the hens. It's derogatory. Oh, you know what's really ticking me off lately? Okay, you want to hear this?
Oh,
what's
absolutely
really ticking me off lately is you hear commentators, etc., they call men in politics by their last name. Trump, Walz, Vance. They talk about Kamala, and they either mispronounce it or they call her Kamala. Why don't they call her Harris? That's clearly a man thing.
Yeah.
Right? Because the guys grew up, they call each other by their last name on sports teams. They call each other by their last names in fraternities. They call each other by their last names talking about football. I call my husband by his last name. only because it's funny. It's Noonan. So, you know, like Caddyshack, Noonan. But that's just another example. Why is nobody pointing that out? Why are we not pointing that out?
Well, you that and I is, will do it together.
That is a slam, don't you think?
Yeah.
It's tiny. It's tiny, but it's those tiny things that create culture.
Those tiny things are the insidious ones usually.
Yes.
You know, you find yourself doing it because that's the way it's done without ever going like, wait a minute. You know, like what's the big deal there? You know, it's, and even if we've got I'm up in Canada, we've got this thing where oftentimes when a new budget comes down, the finance minister will buy a new pair of shoes.
So well, what?
Well, you know, it may get noticed when the man, mm-hmm. if it's a man, if it's a woman, then it's a matter of, this is the finance minister. How much did she spend on those new shoes? And, you know, should she be wearing heels that high? It's like, who cares?
Well, then there's a whole expose on how many pairs of shoes she has in her closet.
Oh, yeah.
And were they Jimmy Choo's or were they?
Oh, well, we went through that here in British Columbia because the woman who got us through COVID, and she was fabulous, and she was being written up around the world because she was so good, and she has a thing for a local shoemaker.
Good for her.
And so then every time she was on TV, which was almost daily in the beginning, is like, okay, we're listening, but we're also panning down to the shoes. You know, like, really? Ah, dear. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's pretty crazy. Oh, where am I going here? Oh, just while we're talking about, no, I just, I get off on tangents. I'm sorry. While we're talking about ageism, I've read mm-hmm. quite recently that the way society now leans toward faceless communication, so texts, emails, all that sort of thing, many managers are looking for employees who can look them in the eye, they can mm-hmm. actually answer the phone, and hold a conversation in real time, because so many people avoid that now. And I'm yeah. not defining age there.
I avoid it. Because it takes time.
Well, yeah, I guess. But they know that they can teach them the skills of the job. They're getting people who can actually hold the conversation, can look someone in the eye, can shake hands with somebody.
Yes.
Do you find that?
I do. I think I'm torn about it because I identify a lot with the younger generations as far as I want to be efficient. I want to have time with my family. I want to have work be work and home be home. And things happen so quickly that if I don't need to spend, you know, half an hour on the phone with someone to get something done, I don't really want to. Yes, if I want them to be my friend or whatever, yeah, if I need to convince them to buy my products and services, absolutely. Do I need to recreate the water cooler chat that takes 30 minutes out of my day? No.
No.
So that's why I'm a little bit torn. I 100% agree that face-to-face communication is definitely starting to decline. The skill to be able to do that is starting to decline. And the reason is because of, you know, remote work or the boundaries that people are setting. And it's easier to text somebody sometimes.
Oh, yeah, I grant you that. But I just mean like when somebody yeah. absolutely refuses to answer a phone because they just don't have
oh,
a clue.
Yeah. No.
I have a lot of older people in my life, so in their 80s and 90s. My grandson is 14, and they include him if they include me quite often because he and I are very close. And so often I do get that comment of, oh, what a great young man. You know, he shook my hand and he looks me in the eye when he talks to me.
Yes.
And my grandson admits it's difficult, but he's working on it. And mm-hmm. I go like, well, that's great, because if the need arises, and I'm not saying just, you know, water cooler stuff, but if the need arises, the yes. ability to do that is
oh, absolutely.
Important. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that brings up another thing about ageism, particularly with women. And you've probably heard this recently, is the older we become, the more invisible we are.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And if you're invisible, no one's having a direct conversation with you.
Well, and you even hear yourself being talked about instead of talked to. So
yes,
tell Julie that, you know, I need this or something like that. And it's, excuse me, I'm sitting right here like.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you also mentioned, you've mentioned a couple of times AI with the mainstreaming of all things technological and AI and who knows what else is around the corner. What, or I don't know if you can answer this, what is the learning curve for older workers compared to young people who've never known a different world?
Right. There is a, what I find is that there's a baseline that the younger generations who had computers in college, maybe mid-X, Gen X down, it's easier for them to perceive new technology as a possible tool. It's easier for them to almost conceptualize where that technology would fit in the overall do I need it, do I not question. People who didn't grow up with the internet, didn't grow up with computers. I didn't have a computer until I was in the, well, until the 90s, you know, when I went to work at the bank. I had one maybe a little bit before that, but not much. If you didn't grow up with it, it wasn't part of your learning, how you learn. You didn't build it into your learning methodology. Let's put it that way. We had to learn a different way. We had to talk to people. We had to go to the library. We had to look up books. We didn't have YouTube. We had instructions on a piece of paper if we were lucky.
In size 4 font.
Or we had a grandpa who would tell us how to do it, right? So I think there is a steeper learning curve for older people just because they don't have that ingrained in their learning process. That technology bit is just as part of their learning journey as books were for ours. And the neat thing about it, though, is that when you talk to younger people, and I talk to my my kids all the time, and I'm like, okay, here's what I need. You have any ideas? And they'll say, yeah, take a look at this app or this app. And I'm like, okay, no. Will this do that? Yes. Great. Let's get it on. I don't need to know the background history of there's 10 apps. They all do it. I don't care. I want one and I want the immediate application. And this is pure adult learning theory 101. Adults will learn it when they need it. Very few adults have the time or the inclination to meander, right? And so they will learn it when they need it. I had to be forced to go to an Excel class because I didn't know where I would use the tool back then. Now, obviously, I do, but I'm not an early adopter. Let's put it that way. I am an AI, though. That technology is, you need to at least know what it is. And because you're using it every day, whether you know it or not.
Yeah. I guess sometimes it's like, you know, for those people who sort of think, ah, it's way beyond me. Just imagine yourself going into a whole new profession. So, I mean, if a librarian wanted to become an auto mechanic, it's like no experience except maybe how to fill up the gas tank.
Yep.
So start from scratch and figure it out, because if it's going to be important to you, or if it is important to you, then it's important to learn it, you know. So just to be open-minded, I guess, is where I'm going with that.
This
is totally new, but I need it, I want it, whatever. So I'm gonna figure it out, come hell or high water.
Yeah. So. And sometimes it's just the level of learning it. It's okay not to know everything. It's okay to just know What is it and what is it not? Because I'm never going to program anything. I'm not going to build code for anything. It's not something I'm interested in. You know, if I'm forced to, I will, but it's just not, I don't have a direct need for it in my life right now.
And it's interesting too, because as I just said, I work with a lot of older people, and because I've got the podcast, I create websites, I do this. It's like, I'm having a problem on the computer. Ask Agnes.
No.
And I'm going, Agnes only knows what she knows. It's like, it doesn't give me carte blanche. It's like, I build a website, doesn't mean I automatically know everything.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like trying to get that across to people.
Give them the
I know what I know
number.
And I'm good at it. But
yeah. Yeah.
It.
Well, that's just an indication they're clinging, they're trying to go somewhere where it's safe to ask the questions.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Yeah.
And that's another thing that I talked about on a podcast earlier this week, was we have to make it psychologically safe for everyone, not just, you know, the younger folks in the workforce, but everyone in the workforce to be able to seek the knowledge that they need without shame that they don't already know it.
Yeah.
Because I can guarantee you, there are, you know, Gen Zs who do not know what AI is and don't want to know. So, you know, the bottom line is you have to be willing to ask the question and look stupid if you need to look stupid.
But not be made to look stupid.
But not be made to look stupid.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a huge fear. Huge fear with men. You know, we're a little, women are just a tad bit more willing to look stupid and ask a question than men are.
Yeah. And be honest about what we know and don't know.
But I'll ask a group of women before I'll ask a group of men.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. I'm with you there. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to bring the conversation down to a more personal level, if that's okay.
Okay. Sure.
It might be left field. So I hope I'm not putting you on the spot. We've been talking about the business world of culture, legacy, all that stuff. What would you say to those older women who've always been the powerhouse of the family? They've made sure everything runs with precision. They've been the glue for decades, but now they're ready to slow down, let their next generation do the heavy lifting, literally and figuratively. What are your thoughts around that? Like trying to let go and let the next generation know they have a responsibility to step up.
It really depends on the woman. Some women are never able to let go. I have a couple of those that I'm thinking of. I work with women who want to pass the torch, pretty much. Because otherwise, I'm dealing with a brick wall. People have to want to change. They have to want to pass the torch. And if they want to pass the torch, they have to ensure that who they're passing it to not necessarily does everything exactly like you do it, but is able to accomplish whatever it is that you're passing the torch to do. I think a lot of women, just like men, hold on to what they're the best at, what they have been given the most accolades for, where they feel the most powerful, because they're not sure what's next. And they identify with that power. They identify with, you know, I'm the boss of the family. They couldn't do it without me. The bottom line is, yeah, they can. We're all replaceable. We're all going to die eventually. You can have just as much pride and power in watching the person that you mentored be as successful as they're going to be in their way as you can, and keeping that power and, you know, eventually being forced to let go of it by yourself or whatever.
To bring it down to the very simplest level, how many people do you hear saying, Oh, my mom made the very best whatever, but the recipe died with her. And I know within my, and I
Yes.
said that's taken it right down to the simplest level,
Yeah.
but I know I'm working at my age now to, my two daughters are local. So just saying to them, like, I need a hand with this, or, can the husbands come over and, do some heavy lifting with that? Or, like right now, I've just gone through a move and we've just had Canadian Thanksgiving. So
Oh, yes.
one daughter said, I'll do Thanksgiving, I'll host, which it's usually been me. And she's married to a Spanish guy who does not do, I don't know, his family, I won't speak generally about Spanish people, but his family's never done a turkey dinner.
Yeah.
So I go to Thanksgiving dinner and it's like a bit of this, and we call it bit dinners, like they have this and this and this and this and this, and if you can't find yourself a meal, that's your problem.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's great with me because I didn't have to do the cooking and I didn't have to do any prep and I didn't have to do all that stuff the day before. So yeah, just letting
Right.
them
And
know it's.
weren't you proud of her?
Oh yeah, I just sat there and ate
I
and
mean, laying out such a feast.
yeah, no, for
And
sure.
being a host, it's a huge, it's a, I, well, I'm forced to, for especially for big family things. I don't have room to host anybody.
Well, it was interesting too. I mean, proud of her, but it was interesting to see. Whereas when the family was younger and I was doing those big, huge food things, is I that was me. That was on me. I watched the two of them in the kitchen, dodging around each other,
Oh,
and they're
yeah.
doing this, and he's doing that, and she's doing this, and it's like, cool. Yeah, I'll go entertain the grandchildren. That works for me.
Oh, yeah. I'm having my first grandson and Thanksgiving here in the US
November.
at the
Oh,
end
okay,
of November.
that'll be exciting. That's
Yeah.
great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, before we wrap, and it was interesting talking to you today. I was on my Facebook page earlier today, and a quote came up that I had posted 12 years ago.
Oh,
And I
wow.
went, well, isn't that just perfect? Of course, it's from Charles Darwin. And it said, it's not the strongest of the species that survives, nor the most intelligent, but the one most responsive to change.
Oh, yes.
And I thought, well, isn't that perfect? I'm talking to Julie today, and it just
Absolutely. It is
arrived.
so true. It is so true. It's how flexible can you be? You can still be authentically you and like things and not like things, and that's perfectly acceptable. It's in how you make that determination. So is it because you've got a big block up around your mind saying there isn't anything new? I like everything that used to be. Are you accepting of the world as it is right now? And are you living now? Or are you living back then? I'm living now, and I know a lot of people that just can't seem to accept where they live right now, and they
And the
want
change is
to,
inevitable.
take everything. They want to change it back, and it's not going back.
There we go. Period.
Period. It's not
Anything
going
we haven't
back.
talked about that you want mid-age women to think about?
Just live with purpose, create value, be kind, love everybody, regardless if you agree with them or not. That's
There we
pretty
go.
much it.
Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
My website is jnoonanconsulting.com. My other website is intuitivewisdomcoach.com. And
Okay.
I produce a podcast as well called Roaming with Restless Women.
Okay, that answers that question. I saw that. I think
Yeah.
on Facebook, do you have a group or something?
On
Or
Facebook, I have a group called Roaming with Restless Women.
yeah, because I
Yes.
thought, I'd have to check that one out.
Oh, yeah.
And you're on LinkedIn, right?
I'm definitely on LinkedIn. You can look for me there. I hang out there a lot.
I'm sorry, I have another, in case you're wondering where my eyes just went, I have another monitor over here, and I must admit, oh, I went to the wrong one. Doesn't matter. I won't do that because everything's loaded. Oh, podcast. I assumed your podcast would be around this. It's the one link I didn't click on. There we go. I'm going to have to check that out. Okay, to continue. Before we close, can I ask you a personal question?
Absolutely.
You are a digital nomad. I'm so impressed. Yes. I was so excited to learn that. I love the thought of the nomadic life. Tell us how that came to be.
I have wanted to do this for, 8 years now. I heard about full-time RVers, people that work on the road, and I decided that I was going to do it eventually. And the opportunity came around when I opened my own business. And so I spent several years deciding what would I need to do to make that happen, and took baby steps. My husband is very, very supportive, amenable. Basically, he's very laid back. Whatever I want to do, he goes. He loves it. So I started doing research online, watching lots of YouTubes, and picked the rig that I wanted and mapped out the whole first year of travel. And we just we sold our farm in Tennessee, moved to Florida, rented a house in Florida so that we wouldn't have property anymore. And basically sold pretty much everything, gave what we wanted to keep to my kids or in a storage area, moved in and started traveling last March. We left Florida. We winter in Florida because, you know, I don't do cold, period, ever.
What are you talking about?
I'm telling you, I'm in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina right now, and it was cold this morning. It was in the 40s.
Cry me a river.
So I know. So yeah, we have traveled. We left Florida in March, and we drove all the way across the United States. We didn't go all the way to California. That's for next trip, and up to Montana. Did a lot of the U.S. national parks out west, and came back down through Chicago and Tennessee and back to North Carolina.
Okay, so you know what you're doing. I need to get you back on podcast, and we're going to do an RVing podcast. I've interviewed a couple, and looking at my categories, the travel RV thing is like lacking.
Oh, I love it. Yes.
Okay, so we will arrange that. That sounds good.
That sounds great. I would love it.
Okay, your website link is in the show notes, and all of the links are on your page at our website. Now that I've got all these links, I'm so excited. Listeners, you may or may not still be in the workforce. You may or may not be executive level. But talk to us about your leaving experience. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Perhaps there was a question I didn't ask, Julie. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. And share this episode. It's an intergenerational world, no matter where you are or what you do. Your friends might appreciate having a professional view of this mid-age time of life. Plus, we're trying to grow boomer listenership, right? Help us out. Share. Leave stars and reviews where you can. The goddesses of algorithms love them. And you can support this podcast by buying me a coffee. Pretty cheap option. The link is in the show notes and above Julie's head on her page at our website. I've also registered at Substack. Following there is free. Julie Noonan, thank you for being my guest today and bringing us insight into legacy from a corporate viewpoint, and a corporate viewpoint that is actually transferable to our personal lives. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Agnes. I really enjoyed my time with you.
It went so fast. It really did.
It did.
Have a great rest of week.
Thank you.